The cold-blooded killing of Michael Brown is the last straw, say young activists around the country, including those here in the DMV. And more links this week from Gaza to Missouri, coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for August 21st, 2014, here on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice. And we might add, for the occupied, for the colonized, for those on lockdown, under curfew, under siege, and under apartheid. On the Ground lists up voices of activists and activism here in the nation's capital. I'm your host, Esther Averam. Today, we'll continue to explore the links between Gaza and Missouri with Margaret Huang of Amnesty International and new members of the On the Ground team, Palestinian-American activist and editor Amani Al-Khatoba and columnist Richard Prince of Journalisms. But first, our headlines. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has condemned the police crackdown on protests in Ferguson, Missouri. In an interview with Reuters, Navi Pillay said the United States should cherish people's right to protest. Pillay also compared the clashes in Ferguson to those sparked by apartheid in her native South Africa. The death of Michael Brown has coincided with other police killings of unarmed African-American men, including a mentally challenged man wielding a knife in nearby St. Louis. In California, a father of five died in custody after sheriff's deputies repeatedly hit him with a taser. San Bernardino County sheriffs say they stopped Dante Parker while he was riding his bicycle after a resident reported seeing a man flee on a bike following a burglary attempt. Just 1 week earlier, police fatally shot 22-year-old John Crawford inside a Walmart in Beaver Creek, Ohio. Witnesses said Crawford was holding a toy gun on sale at the store and was shot after failing to put it down. Human Rights Watch says the killings of John Crawford, Michael Brown, and Eric Garner, who was placed in an illegal chokehold by New York City police, raised serious human rights concerns. The protests in Ferguson have reached the National Football League. The players on the secondary lineup for our own Washington team took to the field Monday night with their hands in the air in a gesture of solidarity with Ferguson protests. The team is, of course, facing a racial controversy of its own, with two top football commentators now joining the ranks of those to avoid the name of the team because it is a racial slur. Also here in the DMV, there have been a series of demonstrations since the police killing of Michael Brown. The first major action was a gathering we announced last week at Malcolm X Park as part of the National Moment of Silence. Here are some voices from that rally, followed by a rally that same day and time in Baltimore, in downtown Baltimore. Young activists say that these protests, which are continuing around the country, is the first sustained uprising against police violence and repression that targets them across the country.
Black power. I'll show you. Whenever anybody says amen, they all pay homage to what America tells young black males is that you have to make me feel comfortable or I'll shoot you. You got to kind of be willing or okay with that happening if you want something to change. If you're scared, nothing will happen. Nothing will be the way you want it to be. You know, what disheartens me the most is not that, you know, that racism exists and that police profiling exists. It's that, like, when you try to tell people about it, they don't believe you. That scares me more than the actual racism.
We remember Michael Brown today, but we just don't remember him in some sort of abstract way. We remember Michael Brown when we reflect back upon Kevin Cooper. His mother's here today. He was killed by the Baltimore City Police a couple of years ago in Baltimore City. We remember Brother Brown, we think of Brother Tyrone West. We remember Brother Brown, we think of Anthony Anderson. We don't think of Brother Brown in some sort of abstract, distant way. We remember Brother Brown, we think of all of the brothers and sisters in this country who are taken down by the police annually. We remember Brother Brown, we think of Brother Eric Garner. We think of Brother Brown, we think of that young lady who was put in the chokehold by the NYPD just days later. Brothers and sisters, we remember Brother Brown not in some sort of abstract, distant way. We remember Brother Brown when we think about the folk that were murdered during the Civil Rights Movement, that were bit and sprayed by water hoses. We remember Brother Brown. So brothers and sisters, we remember Brother Brown and the activities that come in the days and weeks ahead. We remember him as we organize and as we strategize. We remember Brother Brown. We don't let anybody badmouth the action and the activity taking place in Ferguson. Am I right about it today?
Yes. Yes.
We encourage their perspective spirit today. We encourage their energy today. We pray that it is focused and it is guided, and that they have a political plan. But we encourage their passion today. And we're not going to allow for anybody to turn us against our fellow brothers and sisters. Because we recognize that today it's Michael Brown. But if we don't come together in every major city across this country, it could be our son, our nephew, our cousin, our brother, our grandfather tomorrow. One of the things that I'm going to say before I shut down, because we've had the moment of silence, so we've sealed the deal. But here in Baltimore, one of the interesting facts is that the police kill folk in a variety of age ranges. George King was tased 5 times by the Baltimore City Police in a hospital. Brother was 19 years old. He was 19 years old and went into cardiac arrest and died after being tased 5 times by the police. But I think of Brother Tyrone West, and I think of Brother Anthony Anderson, who were in their mid to late 40s. So brothers and sisters, we've got to understand that we are essentially under attack.
Yes.
We are essentially under attack as a community.
Yes.
So that means we've got to organize.
Yes.
We've got to come together.
Yes.
We've got to lock arms.
Yes.
We've got to put our differences aside.
Yes.
And we've got to say that we are indeed our brothers and our sisters.
Yes.
So give yourselves a round of applause for being here today. Members of the Baltimore City Police Department, they were active today. You made them earn their overtime pay today. They were taking pictures and photographs. We don't know which purpose they will be using those photographs for. But the one thing that came to play today is that we proved to them that we are not afraid to take a stand.
Those were voices right here in the DMV at rallies marking the national moment of silence in honor of Mike Brown and all victims of police killing and brutality. The last voice you heard was the Reverend C.D. Witherspoon, who was the main speaker at the rally in Baltimore. A coalition of over 50 social justice organizations, including Food and Water Watch, urged President Obama and Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell to declare the ongoing water crisis in Detroit a public emergency. The groups have asked the Obama administration to make money available from the Public Health Emergency Fund to restore service to residents affected by the shutoffs. on July 21st following a large protest, widespread media scrutiny, and a lawsuit challenging the shutoffs, the Water Department announced a 15-day suspension on new disconnections. During this period, however, the department continued to disconnect customers. At the end of the suspension period, the department will again shut off water service to as many as 3,000 households a week. About 90,000 customers are at risk of losing service. Some privatization experts believe that the water shutoffs in Detroit are a precursor to leasing or selling the city's water system to a private entity. And finally, in our culture and media moment, the 8th D.C. African Diaspora International Film Festival starts tomorrow here in the DMV and will feature 10 films, including 8 D.C. premieres. The festival, which will be held at the Goethe Institute at 812 7th Street in Northwest D.C., will start with the historical documentary Jews of Egypt by Amir Ramses, and also opening night will include In Search of the Black Knight. It explores the state of affairs in the Black American dating scene. The opening night screening will be preceded by a catered reception and followed by a question and answer segment with the film director, Tamaret McKinnon. For a full schedule for the 8th D.C. African Diaspora International Film Festival and to order advance tickets, call 202-864-1760 or visit nyadiff.org. That's nyadiff.org. And those are our headlines and our moment of culture and media. When we come back, more about From Gaza to Missouri and more about what's in the media. Stay with us.
Jordan with a hard time, tales from the dark side, evidence of the settlements on my hard drive. Man, I swear my heart died at the end of that car ride. When I saw that checkpoint, welcome to apartheid. Soldiers wear military green at the checkpoint. Automatic guns, that's machine at the checkpoint. Tables not M16s at the checkpoint. Fingers on the trigger, you'll get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children going to adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint. And red and red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream on the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream on the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
Separation walls that surround in the checkpoint. On top is barbed wire like a crown on the checkpoint. Better have your permits if you found at the checkpoint. Gumming on the tower, aiming down at the checkpoint. Idea is to keep you in fear at the checkpoint. Enter through the cage in the rear of the checkpoint. Feels like prison on a tear at the checkpoint. I'd rather be anywhere but here at this checkpoint. Nelson Mandela wasn't blind to the checkpoint. He stood for free Palestine at a checkpoint. Support BDS, don't give a dime to the checkpoint. This is international crime at the checkpoint. Arabs get treated like dogs at the checkpoint. Cause discrimination is the law at the checkpoint.
That was Jaziri X with Checkpoint on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Averam. Well, the cold-blooded killing of 18-year-old Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, combined with renewed involvement by U.S. in Iran, has largely moved the carnage and the atrocities of Gaza out of the headlines. But Israel has resumed its assault on the Gaza Strip, killing 11 Palestinians after a 10-day pause in violence. Israel said it launched at least 60 airstrikes after Palestinian militants fired rockets in violation of the latest ceasefire, which was due to end at midnight. Since fighting resumed, Israeli strikes have reportedly killed 7 members of a single family, including 3 children, as well as the wife and 2-year-old son of Hamas military commander Mohammed Diouf. There were no reports of Israeli fatalities from rocket fire. More than 2,000 Palestinians, hundreds of them children, have been killed since the Israeli offensive began in July. On the Israeli side, 64 soldiers and 3 civilians have been killed. Protests have also continued around the world. Here in the United States, protesters in Oakland have prevented an Israeli ship from docking in protest of the assault on Gaza. The Zim Paris had been due to unload its goods at the port of Oakland on Saturday, but several thousand activists with the Block the Boat for Gaza campaign gathered at the port, forcing a delay. The ship was again prevented from docking on Sunday after hundreds of people returned to the site. Well, our new on-the-ground team member, Amani Akatopa, an activist and editor, is also on the ground in protest for Palestinian rights. Today, she tells us about the hashtag Drop Joan campaign. Welcome, Amani.
Thank you very much. Well, of course, we have a hashtag campaign going called hashtag Drop Joan, and it is intended to raise awareness about the very racist remarks that Joan Rivers made against the Palestinian people that she has seemingly received zero repercussions for, and it is completely out of line with what we expect from the reactions of people when racism like that takes place in our media. We know that there's no place for hate speech when it comes to our media officials. And it's really upsetting that there is an exception when it comes to the Palestinian people. And this type of dehumanization is certainly a pattern, whether it's regarding Palestinians, peaceful protesters in Palestine, or peaceful protesters in Ferguson.
So you have some clips to play related
Absolutely.
To Joan Rivers.
Definitely.
Let's hear those.
All right, so I'm trying to get celebrity reactions to what's going on with the Palestinians and Israelis right now.
Let me just tell you, if New Jersey were firing rockets into New York, we would wipe them out. I am so bored. We heard they were digging tunnels from New Jersey to New York. We would get rid of Jersey. So I don't want to hear anymore. Oh, we'll do a partial truce. The Palestinians, you cannot throw rockets and expect people not to defend themselves.
What about the civilian casualty rate?
Civilian, then don't put your goddamn things in private homes. I'm sorry, don't you dare put weapon stashes in private homes, and then we say get out. Of course, we're going to do it.
The response normally is where are the civilians supposed to go?
I don't care. They started it. You're all insane. They started it. What are you all saying? They started it. The Israelis did not throw their... For months this has been going on.
How do you resolve
it? What are you supposed to do?
How do you resolve it?
How do I know? Because I have been over there. That's how I know. And I wish the world would know. And BBC should be ashamed of themselves. And CNN should be ashamed of themselves. And everybody, stop it already.
You know, like Dwight Howard tweeted, Free Palestine, took it back. Selena Gomez tweeted a pro-Gaza.
Oh, Selena Gomez. Oh, yeah, that college grad.
Wow, so this is Joan Rivers talking to reporters. So tell me about the Drop Joan campaign.
Well, I mean, that was just one incident of her saying these very racist comments. She actually went at it a second time with the paparazzi, in which she said that that Palestinians deserve to die when she was asked about the Palestinian civilians. And then she also went on Israeli television and said the very anti-Semitic slur that all Palestinians should receive nose jobs, and that's our way of solving the conflict, that we should send our best Jewish doctors into the Gaza Strip and just give everyone nose jobs. So, you know, it's kind of a huge double standard when we see these types of anti-Semitic remarks being used against the Palestinian people, and there are no repercussions for this woman who is employed by NBC, by QVC, and by AMC for several shows that she is a host of. And we haven't seen any action being taken against her. So we started the hashtag campaign in order to try to bring up that pressure that she needs to be held accountable for those words.
Okay, so that's on Twitter. And if folks are on Twitter, they can dial that up. They can go to hashtag Drop Joan, right?
Yeah.
DROPJOAN, Drop Joan, to support that campaign.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Imani. And, you know, as we unpack these issues of media images, coverage, and bias, we're also joined on the line in this segment by award-winning journalist Richard Prince, who writes the journalism's column devoted to issues of media diversity. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah. Now, I suppose that Ferguson is definitely in the mix when it comes to issues of media and diversity this week. So why don't you give us your take on what's happening, and then we'll follow up.
Well, I think what's happening is that lots of reporters have been and are streaming to Ferguson. The press, the latest thing that I've written about this has been that the press is, in a sense, becoming part of the story. I've got a story here that we've linked to from the Riverfront Times, which is an alternative paper in St. Louis, that says that they don't see any change in police journalist confrontations, and that they expect more journalists to be arrested simply because of the way the police are behaving, and on the other hand, that members of the media are more willing to ignore police commands because they think that they're out of bounds. So that's one thing. And another story that I had this morning in the journalism's column was about the Associated Press sending out a memo to all of its staff members saying that they don't want the Michael Brown to be referred to as a teenager any longer. He's 18 years old, and that it's better to use the precise term of the precise age, 18, in all the stories. This is significant, I suppose, because there's also backlash brewing among a lot of people about that Michael Brown is receiving too much sympathetic treatment by the media, in the same way they said the same thing about Trayvon Martin. And the Associated Press doesn't want to be caught in the middle of the two sides, and so I guess it's taking this stand for precision. Mm-hmm. But you know, it can also be interpreted as caving into pressure from the other side.
Wow. Okay, so we are certainly glued to the tube, and we're not letting, you know, any media spin, you know, distract our attention from, you know, what's happening in Ferguson or in Gaza or anywhere. So thank you, Imani, and thank you, Richard Prince. When we come back, the Israel government is actually blocking Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch from entering the Gaza Strip, and the organization just returned from Ferguson. Stay with us.
Black body being fed to the system. Black American dead on prison. Love for the murderers, never the victims. Dead kids can't beg for forgiveness. We're at war. What you telling me to be peaceful for? When they break the peace by firing a piece till the piece gets tore. And I'm f*** about Crip Trip store. Calling all gods as frauds in the pulpit. Miss me with that get along bull. Scared cause your master got a bull whip. I'ma get a hollow point, that's a good tip. We are not for the okie doke. MJ's doctor in an overcoat. See, I'ma give him shots to the overdose. Street preaching to the block, got the Holy Ghost. Cause scene, got my enemy in the city.
That was Jaziri X again with 212 talking about Michael Brown and other recent cases of young black men being killed at the hands of the police. If you're just tuning in, this is Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition, where we lift up voices of social activism and social justice. So right now, we're going to be joined by Margaret Wang, Deputy Executive Director of Amnesty International, a 13-person human rights delegation from Amnesty International just returned from Ferguson. Welcome to On the Ground, Margaret.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I know you are calling for an investigation into police tactics used during the protests. And what were your findings in Ferguson, and what caused you to make this call?
The reason Amnesty International USA sent a delegation to Ferguson was really to shine a light on what's happening on the ground. We wanted the people, and particularly the police in Ferguson, to know that we were watching and that we were there to serve as witnesses and to offer support to the community. I think along with colleagues from many other social justice groups who have been going to Ferguson to play this role of witness and support, we found a lot of pain and a lot of anger. And I think we have a lot of deep concerns about the ongoing human rights violations that are taking place.
Now, when you say human rights violations, can you tell us specifically what you're referring to?
So, obviously, the people of Ferguson have a right to protest the lack of transparency around the investigation of Officer Wilson's shooting of Mike Brown. And they have a right to protest the situation of the relationship between the community and the police. And because those rights are actually being infringed upon each night, I think our concern is that people are not able to exercise the right to freedom of assembly, the right to freedom of speech, because each night the police are curtailing and restricting those rights. While the police obviously have the right to do that in cases where there is imminent threat to the community, it's not always clear that there are threats, and that's where our concerns are resting.
Okay. Well, this show is about from Gaza to Missouri, and so I know that I just mentioned a recent report that Amnesty International has been barred by the State of Israel from entering Gaza. And there are also recent reports from Electronic Intifada about how police forces operating in Ferguson, the tactics they're using, the perhaps the equipment that they're using, you know, that these police forces had training in Israel. So can you tell me like a little bit about Amnesty International's like reaction to that, you know, about being banned from Gaza, and also about this training of police forces here in the United States by Israel?
Obviously, we're disappointed by Israel's decision, but we hope that that is going to be changed, because it is critical to be able to have human rights observers on the ground to make sure that all accounts are taken and that an impartial observer is able to report out on what's happening. We made that same case to Captain Ron Johnson in Ferguson, that human rights and legal observers should be allowed to observe the police and their interactions with the community, particularly during the time of the curfew, which has now been lifted. But we wanted to make sure that the police knew that they were being observed and that they were witnesses to whatever actions were taking place.
So when you were in Ferguson, did you find that your activities were limited or hampered by the police?
Yes, but everyone's actions were limited and hampered. Mm-hmm. Obviously, during the curfew, we tried to make the case to Captain Johnson directly that he should allow us to stay wearing, you know, clothing that would show that we were designated as observers, as human rights and legal observers. And he indicated to us that if we were still present on the ground after the curfew, that we would be subject to arrest. And that was true for all people in the crowd.
Now, I know that I believe this is the first time that Amnesty International has been sent to observe police altercations here in the United States?
You know, Amnesty has done a lot of work in the United States. We've been working on the death penalty for decades. We've done a lot of research on issues of police brutality, mass incarceration, and more. This is the first time that we've had a situation, an ongoing situation, where not only we had people on the ground to do investigations and monitoring, but also to offer support to the community, so that it was not just as researchers, but in fact as part of the organizing effort to support the community.
Now, in terms of Gaza, you know, I do believe that Amnesty International has obviously been there, but in the past, there has been criticism that Amnesty International hasn't given the people in Gaza, the people of Palestine, just an opportunity to have their full humanity kind of known by, excuse me, the larger world. Is this, you know, investigation that you're doing in Gaza recently more detailed than you've done in the past?
You know, that is unfortunately not something that I could address, because I don't work on Gaza. Mm-hmm. My work is primarily focused on the United States as part of Amnesty's section here in the United States. Mm-hmm. But we actually have had researchers and campaigners on the ground in Gaza for many, many years. And the request to go back in for this most recent, that was recently denied, was specifically to look at the human rights impact of the recent conflict. So that is apparently what they are precluding us from being able to do.
You know, and one last thing about Ferguson, I know I'm kind of jumping back and forth, but for me, the issues are certainly linked. You know, in addition to the how police are treating the protesters, is Amnesty's research also looking into the actual shooting and also the fact that the body was allowed to lay there for so long, and, you know, just kind of the reaction immediately after the shooting in terms of how the community was treated? Is that part of a human rights, you know, scope of research?
Some of that is definitely part of the human rights scope. I mean, I think what we're saying is that there are very clear international human rights standards on how police should handle any interaction that resorts to violence. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what standards were followed here, and why were standards not followed? And then who will be held accountable for not complying with those standards? Okay. Many of the standards, you know, are the same as what police departments would adopt in terms of their own internal procedures. So there is a major question about what procedures were followed, and if the procedures themselves are wrong, or if, in fact, the procedures were violated. And all of those are things that we want the investigation to look at. So we've been calling for an impartial and independent investigation in order to make sure that the community's demands are heard, that they can trust the outcome and the findings of that investigation.
Okay. Well, I'll have to leave it there, but we certainly want to talk to Amnesty International some more going forward on these subjects. I've been speaking with Margaret Wang, Deputy Executive Director of Amnesty International. Thank you, Margaret, for joining us.
Thanks for your time.
When we come back, it's your turn, and you can call 202-588-0893 to comment on our topics today. We're talking about Ferguson, we're talking about Gaza, and the links between soldiers and police existing above the law. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition on the mighty WPFW in Washington, D.C., your station for jazz and justice. I'm Esther Averam, and Amani Akatopa is hanging out with me here in the studio today. And it's also your turn. You can call 202-588-0893 to comment on our topics today, Ferguson, Gaza, the links between soldiers and police existing above the law, war crimes in Gaza, another police killing of an unarmed black man that has sparked national protest. 202-588-0893. Please, if you've already called this week, please refrain from calling and allow someone else an opportunity. I think I have my first caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
First of all, good morning, Esther.
Good morning.
This is Tyrone from Northwest Washington, D.C. I am heartbroken over all of this, what's going on in Gaza, what's going on in Missouri. I feel that it's all wrong. It's plain as the nose on your face and ears on the side of your head. It's wrong. It's unfair. The situation with Missouri, I think that what I would say is even the Captain Johnson or Lieutenant Johnson or whoever, whatever, whichever position he occupies, in Ferguson, Missouri, I would suggest strongly that he watches himself, because the fact is he could be a target. That's my major concern.
Okay.
There's a lot of anger right now. So I would suggest that black officials, and that includes him, to please be careful.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Okay, and thank you for calling. 202-588-0893. We have another caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
My name's John. I'm calling from Manassas, Virginia.
Welcome.
Thanks. I've heard a lot of various comments about the incident in Ferguson, Missouri, and there's a few things I'd like to point out. One, you have a individual who committed a strong-arm robbery minutes before, and then subsequently attacks a police officer who is arresting the police officer and then returns to attack the police officer.
I think you're breaking up. Try to call back. You're breaking up right now. We'll go to the next caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Anad, and I'm calling from Maryland. And I am in St. Louisan, and I want to give a shout out to my homies there for setting it off. The St. Louis is noted for the racism and the separation that the white policemen had for their poor black people there. And they thought the people would just go away. I'm planning a week there, the first week in September. I'm taking my sign. I see it as a global movement. I'm so glad that you have this program with the Palestinians and the people in Ferguson. The number one thing that I want to say is that yesterday a young person read to me a tweet from T.I., the thug, the person who has never done anything for anybody, and he had the nerve to call the black people monsters for looting. And what he showed as a looter was one long person in the freezer of a liquor store getting a Coke 45. That was not a looter. That was not what needs to be in the forefront of people's minds. I'm so disappointed that he has an audience where he can influence young people who don't have a clue. The clue is that that man was murdered.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling. Next caller, just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Isaac, Washington, D.C.
Hello, welcome.
Good morning. I have looked at this through the years, for years and years and years. We continue to legitimize an illegal government. Israel is an illegal government. Some people went and took some people lands that God told them. And when I stopped asking them the question that every nation on the earth, including South Africa, have abandoned the theory of apartheid. Now we got Israel sitting up here saying, look, even though I took your land, even though I massacred tens of thousands of your people, I still refuse to allow you to live on your own soil in peace. And it would be similar to the United States now going on the Indian reservation, which they call Indian country, but Indian reservation now, bumming up the Native Americans because one Native American or two Native Americans decided to throw a rock to hit somebody and they didn't kill nothing. And to try to make a correspondence between that and Ferguson, I can't just take Ferguson and isolate it. It's been going on all around this country. But it has been so that the masses of the people is not accepting it because the younger dudes are killing and massacring and destroying them.
Okay, well, thank you for that call. You know, we've gotten a lot of calls this morning. We'll go to our next caller and just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yeah, so you're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. My name's Ron. I'm calling from Virginia. And just in view of the Ferguson situation, I had a question that I guess I'd like to put before the listeners. I've always seen that we do have black policemen or peace officers all over the United States. And they, of course, encounter white people who are irate or that may have done a strong arm robbery or whatever they might want to call it, or are suspected of something. But how come we never ever hear of a black peace officer shooting down a white person in the United States of America with the claim that they were afraid of them or her, or that they had some kind of weapon, or they thought the cell phone was a weapon, or that when he put his hands up, he charged at me, so I killed him? We never hear that. So, I mean, what's the difference here? Most of the time, it's usually a white police officer that has some fear, I suppose also with a level of superiority or authority, that has some fear that he suggests was the reason that he shot a black man down, and with multiple shots, as if someone was, the person with the gun was afraid or backed into a corner or something like that. So my suggestion and thought is, why would we allow persons with that profile to even have a gun, more or less become a peace officer, when they are clearly afraid of the people that they're supposed to be keeping the peace for?
Right. Okay, thank you for that call. We have more callers. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
John from Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Are you calling back?
Yeah, calling back. Better signal now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. People are using this as an argument. When I say people, the black community, he's using this as an argument to riot, when the fact of the matter is that you have a black thug who attacked a police officer. Mm. And in doing so, if you attack a police officer, you are now subject to whatever happens. And if you attack the police officer and he has a gun and he shoots you, well, guess what? That's part of it. Mm. And that's a consequence you need to be willing to accept. Mm. And it has nothing about racially charged issues. It has to do about a person breaking the law, attacking an officer, and then these are the consequences of it. No more, no less.
Well, it's very interesting. Okay, thank you for your call. You know, I think it's really important to hear from people like John, because it's always important to hear what people are saying, like on Fox News and other quarters and, you know, in places that I don't, you know, go. And so, I mean, it's very interesting because he says a few things. He says, number one, that he calls Michael Brown a thug. He said that he committed a strong arm robbery when there's no evidence of that. And the police who shot him dead knew nothing about this so-called alleged robbery that was never reported, right? So that was not even, you know, yeah. And then he says that he attacked the police officer. None of these things have been put out. And all I know is that he was on his knees with his hands in the air, and this police officer continued to shoot him, the final shot being one through his head that killed him. And they know it was, he was on his knees with his hands up because it grazed the top of his head. This officer is shorter than him, and he was, you know, he couldn't have shot at that trajectory and hit him, you know, if he was standing up, coming forward, him attacking him. So anyway, so it's important to hear people like John from Virginia. And, you know, this is Community Watch and Comment, and whether they're paid by the Heritage Foundation or whoever to come on the air, you know, there are people who are actually paid, you know, like we aren't, but some people are actually paid to, like, you know, call C-SPAN and call us. But, you know, we're here to be a station for jazz and justice. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. You wanted to say something, Imani?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add to what you were saying, that it's really interesting that he used that type of stereotypical language to deflect from the facts on the ground, you know, and especially with the autopsy reports coming out that Michael Brown did have his hands in the air and he was completely unarmed. You have a teenager that was unarmed, that was getting shot, and only weeks before, we saw that in New York, another black man was killed by being put in a chokehold who was also unarmed. So I really don't see how cops wouldn't have been able to, you know, arrest Mike Brown if they needed him without having to fire a single bullet. It just doesn't make sense.
Right. And it almost seems, and a lot of what I hear, you know, when I hear people like John from Virginia, what I hear is that they're discounting all the eyewitnesses who saw what they saw, not only the person with Mike Brown, who was his friend, but people who didn't even know Mike Brown, who don't have any interest in kind of skewing the truth, who saw the police officer run behind him, shooting him. So the young man is running away, and the police officer is shooting him. He gets shot, he turns around, puts his hands up, and then he goes down on his knees, and he continues to shoot him while he's down on his knees until he kills him. So it's just, you know, striking to me, because people hear what they want to hear.
Yeah, and it's also interesting, it's an interesting contrast to the caller right before him, who brought up the point about how come we don't hear about black police officers that are shooting down white men and claiming that they feared the white men, right? So, you know, how come this type of incident, I'm using air quotations right now, of a black unarmed man being a threat to cops, how come that only happens to black men? How come that only happens to people of color? How come we don't see that happening with white people? How come white suspects are able to get from the place of their crime into the cop car completely alive and black men are gunned down in the street? It doesn't make sense.
That's actually a good point, because someone shared with me on Facebook, I think it was my friends up in New York, this picture, and they said, you know, white privilege means that a suspect who goes into a movie theater, mows down dozens of people, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. and injures, you know, kills people, injures injures people can be safely escorted to the police car, you
and
know, and given due process.
And a black man that hasn't killed a single person gets shot in cold blood.
Yes. That's so, ridiculous. Yeah. So obviously, you know, we're talking about a lot of issues here. So let's go back to the lines, though. We don't want to take up our time from our listeners and callers. Caller, say your first name and where you're calling from.
Donald, Washington, D.C.
Hi, Donald.
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to address that last caller, but you did it so eloquently, it's not necessary for me to speak on that. However, I do have another comment. One of the things that came out that I would like for Amnesty International or someone to address is the number of military vehicles that they have throughout the country and by the police department.
Turn your radio down. I hear something in the background, a TV or something.
The number of police, military vehicles and weaponry that they have throughout the country in police departments and how they relate to the black community. Are they only in areas where the black community is located? I'd like to get that information and see what we can do about getting those military equipment away from the police because...
Yes. Yes, this is equipment that the Pentagon, through a Pentagon program, these police departments are getting this equipment. And also, I think we mentioned just very briefly when we were talking to Margaret Wang of Amnesty International, there's also grants that these police departments are getting to go study in Israel. And so they're learning a lot of these police tactics that they're using now under the guise of kind of like the war on terror and, you know, like training around terrorism, and so they're bringing it back on our streets. So,
and I think under the Freedom of Information Act, we can get that. Probably Amnesty International or some other organization can get the information about what qualifies a police department for the grant.
Oh yeah, we don't have to dig that. We don't have to do a Freedom of Information Act. We could just find that out. So, but thanks for that tip, and we should look that up. You know, with what resources we have here. And or tap the people like Amnesty International who have a lot more resources. Let them find out for us. 202-588-0893. Caller, you're next. Say your first name and where you're calling from.
James from Washington, D.C.
Hi.
Thank you for the show. I want to thank all the people who went down to Ferguson to support the people down there. But I think there are other ways we can do this better. If we can organize people to at least stop spending money during the holiday season, that's the only way you're going to get some respect. Same way people didn't take the bus in Montgomery, Alabama for over a year. That's exactly what we need to do. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you for calling. Next caller, just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Oh, Freedom in D.C. And I think...
Good morning.
I think there's a big problem with us. And I was thinking, you know, just like some years ago when we began to talk about the war on drugs, that it was the war in the black community. It took a long time for black people, or a lot of people in general, to see that as true. And now, today, we're trying to undo what I think this is going to be damn near impossible to undo. And then likewise with the police shooting. You know, we're totally unprotected as a people, black people, and specifically brown people. We're totally unprotected, and we keep going to legal situations or to the courts and to the law of a land where the laws are structured against us, and thinking we're going to change those laws in order to stop things, especially the police brutality and the murder, from happening. Well, I think that we need to be realistic. We're totally unprotected. Mm-hmm. People need to begin to protect themselves, number one, and defend when necessary.
Okay.
And that's an important aspect, because if we don't begin to shift our thinking in that direction, we'll never get out of this problem. Y'all know if you saw the last shooting in St. Louis, the guy was supposed to have the knife. That should be a clear indication and message to us that we can no longer deny the fact that we must take up self-defense for the black community.
Okay. Well, you know, that's actually how the Black Panthers got started. It was actually the Black Panthers for, you know, self-defense. And there was also a group in the South, I think it was in Louisiana, the Deacons for Defense, that believed in arming themselves. And there were lots of groups that during the 60s, when nonviolence was being, you know, advocated for by Dr. King, who believed in self-defense and certainly not, you know, leaving ourselves vulnerable. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. We have more callers. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for your show. This is Mary from Port Washington, Maryland.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you all?
Okay.
I'm responding to Mr. John. He will be the reason why we must get to the polls quickly. And I hope this galvanizes the people in Ferguson and around the nation. And I applaud the young people for keeping the protest going. They need to stop doing any looting or anything like that. Those aren't protesters. Those are just fools added to the mix.
Right.
But I love the protest going on. You can't stop. Right now we have a momentum and we need to keep it going. We have to change the laws to get police back to where they need to be, is policing and taking care of the community, not killing. Because all they are now is, what they're told to do is make sure you come home. Doesn't matter who you shoot down. They're shooting people and all they have to do is wound them sometimes. Shooting mentally disabled people, I would never call the police if I had a person like that in my home.
Right, right. Thank you so much. You know, she raises a point that I meant to ask when Margaret Wang was on the phone. And I meant to ask about the whole issue of him being allowed to lay there. I think they said, some people said for up to, we know he laid there for hours, you know, uncovered. But in addition, it taking like for like 45 minutes before an ambulance was called. In other words, he could have just died there on the sidewalk, on the street, and no one was there to give him any type of assistance medically. And I wanted to ask about that as a human rights violation, you know, in terms of not getting medical assistance to someone you've shot. So, and I suppose there's so much focus on the officer, Darren Wilson, that I'm interested in looking at the police in Ferguson in general, in terms of their history, what they've done. And I think that Eric Holder actually is focusing his investigation on the larger police force. 202-588-0893. We're going to have to start winding down, but I can try and get in as many calls as I can, but you'll probably have to keep your comments, try to keep them to a minute. So, good morning. Where you call? Say your name and where you're calling from.
All right. Good morning, Esther. This is Netfa.
Hey, Netfa.
Yeah, this will be brief because I know you're wrong. I just don't know. I don't know if people saw the CNN. There was something on Facebook. There was a CNN interview with the lawyer of the store owner that Michael Brown was allegedly supposed to have robbed or whatever.
Right.
And in this interview, and then you already said it, he confirmed that the store owners, you know, one, they didn't call the police. One, they never said, they don't know if that was Michael Brown. It was just something the police did, and they came and demanded the tape from them. I'm sorry, he didn't say all that. He said that they never confirmed that this was Michael Brown.
Right.
And he was going to say more, and then all of a sudden the feed got lost, and they're saying, oh, what happened? You know, it looked just suspicious because it looked like he was about to say some more stuff that was not going to help the case.
Okay. Thanks, Nepa. Next caller, first name and where you're calling from. We can't hear you. Okay. I think we lost that caller. Next caller, where you're calling from? Give us your first name, please.
Martha, calling from Washington, D.C.
Are really tight for time.
Oh, I want to comment about the video that was supposedly made in the store where he supposedly did a robbery. As a political activist, I have had things done to me in stores to make me appear like I was shoplifting. And I suggest that he paid for the thing and that he was set up. When I was against the Iraq War, I went in a CVS in Maryland and I purchased some things, got a receipt, and then the guy just walked away, not putting my stuff in a bag, not giving me a bag. And there were two entrances to CVS, and I headed to the other entrance where my mother was waiting in her wheelchair, putting the stuff in my bag as I went along. And later I thought to myself, that's on a security camera. It appears that I'm shoplifting.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. We're going to have to wind up. But thank you so much for calling. That will do it for us on the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition. I'm Esther Avarum, and I want to thank Amani Akatofa for hanging out with me this morning. And special thanks to our guest, Margaret Wang of Amnesty International. Thanks to Richard Princh and to Michael Byfield also, and to our engineer, Michael Nasella. And thank you so much for listening and for calling in. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org. We can also listen to all our past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On The Ground Show. Stay tuned for Askia Muhammad with the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Peace.